Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
We begin our program today with a story about a deadly attack at a university in Pakistan on Wednesday. Officials say more than 20 students and teachers were killed, and many more were wounded. Christopher Jones Cruz has the story.
Four attackers used guns and bombs to kill at least 21 students and teachers Wednesday morning at Bacha Khan University in northwest Pakistan. Officials say many more were wounded. Police say the four attackers entered the university in Char Sada at around 9 in the morning and began shooting students and teachers. Students and university workers told a VOA correspondent at the university that some of those killed or wounded were both shot and stabbed. Police official Saeed Wazir Khan said at least two of the attackers were suicide bombers. A spokesman for the Pakistani Taliban denied responsibility for the attack. Mohammad Khorasani said the group does not target non-military organizations. But earlier, a Taliban commander in the area said he sent the four attackers to the university. A Pakistani military spokesman said troops killed the four attackers and took control of the university. About 3,000 students attend the university. Char Sada is about 50 kilometers from the provincial capital, Peshawar. In December 2014, militants linked to the Pakistani Taliban attacked a school in Peshawar and killed 150 people, most of them children. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
The United Nations says that nearly 19,000 Iraqi civilians have been killed in the fighting with Islamic State militants in the past 2 years. Mario Ritter has more.
In addition to the 18,800 civilian deaths, the United Nations report says another 36,000 were wounded between January 2014 and October 2015. The report includes interviews with victims, survivors, or witnesses of violations. Ravina Shamdasani is a UN human rights spokesperson. She says the numbers do not fully represent what is happening in Iraq. The report only includes the number of people directly killed by violence. It does not include many others who have died from lack of access to food, water, or medical care. UN observers blame most of these deaths on Islamic State militants. They say victims include those seen as being opposed to the terror group's rule. Victims have included government civil servants, doctors and lawyers, journalists, and tribal and religious leaders. The report says women and children are subject to sexual violence and sexual slavery. The report finds that people judged by Islamic State's self-appointed courts face punishments such as stoning and amputations. It details examples of public executions. The examples include shootings, beheadings, burning people alive, and throwing people off of buildings. The UN spokesperson says some of the incidents are war crimes and crimes against humanity. She says the Islamic State targets ethnic and religious minorities. The UN finds pro-government forces also are guilty of human rights violations. It says it has received reports of unlawful killings and other abuses by those forces. The UN report notes some of these incidents may have been actions against supposed Islamic State supporters.
This is As It Is from VOA Learning English. Earlier this week, Russia's parliament rejected a law that it would have permitted fines or jail time for homosexual acts. Here now is Katie Weaver.
Rights groups have welcomed the move, but they are also calling for a repeal of a 2013 law that they say has encouraged discrimination against non-heterosexuals. It is called the Gay Propaganda Law. Communist Party lawmakers had proposed the measure that was rejected. Had it passed, gay people could have been fined between $50 and $65 for public demonstrations of affection. The proposed measure described such acts as expression of non-traditional sexual relations. It could also have led to jail time, depending on where the act took place. Human Rights Watch denounced the bill. The group said the measure would have punished people for expressing their identity. It was a rare win in Russia for lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transsexual people, also known as LGBT. Human Rights Watch's Russia Program Director in Moscow, Tanya Lakshina, praised the defeat of the measure in an email. However, she wrote, the parliament has yet to repeal the Gay Propaganda Bill, which has done tremendous damage to Russia's LGBT people. The 2013 measure outlaws the promotion of non-traditional sexual relations among minors. The law has received international criticism. Lakshina says it also has led to increased numbers of attacks on the LGBT community in Russia. Sandra is a transgender woman living in Moscow. She told VOA that she was beaten in broad daylight after the law was passed. Her girlfriend called the police. Officers arrived quickly, she said, but were not willing to arrest her attackers. She said the attackers were not charged with any crime. She said the police insulted her instead. President Vladimir Putin has defended the gay propaganda law, saying it does not ban homosexuality. The chief of Russian state media once said, "The hearts of dead homosexuals should be burned instead of donated." He called them unfit to live. LGBT activists continue their efforts for equal rights, however. Vladimir Komov, a teachers' union official, and engineer Dmitry Svetly are a gay couple living in Moscow. "We're openly gay," says Komov. "We're not hiding in fear," says Svetly. For us, being open is a weapon. I'm Katie Weaver.
British Prime Minister David Cameron says, beginning in October, women entering Britain to join their husbands will have to learn English within 2.5 years. His political opponents and Muslim groups strongly criticize the plan. Christopher Jones-Cruz has more.
British Prime Minister David Cameron has called for women immigrants to Britain to learn English within 30 months or be deported. The plan targets Muslim women joining their husbands already in Britain. Cameron said his plan would help Muslim women immigrants who spend most of their time at home. Cameron wrote Monday that 190,000 Muslim women speak poor English and 38,000 Muslim women speak no English, although they have lived in Britain for years. Their lack of English socially isolates them, he said. Cameron said his plan will help all migrants. Critics said he was singling out Muslims. Cameron said people who do not speak English often live apart from British society. He said they are more likely to be radicalized. He said he believes his plan will help keep the country safe. He says there is no connection between a lack of English and being radicalized. But he said, if you are not able to speak English, not able to integrate, you may find, therefore, you have challenges understanding what your identity is, and therefore, you could be more susceptible to the extremist message. He said the government will spend more than $28 million for English classes for migrants. The classes would focus on immigrant women living in isolated communities. The government said classes would take place in homes, schools, and community centers. Travel and child care costs would be paid. The government says the plan would take effect in October. Female immigrants must pass an English test within 2.5 years of their arrival, or face removal from the country. That threat would remain even if they have children in Britain. No plans are in place to remove migrants who fail the test. But officials said the government may refuse to extend visas or could deny the immigrants permission to stay in the country permanently. Andy Burnham is a senior member of the opposition Labour Party. He called the plan a simplistic, headline-driven approach to extremism that risks unfairly stigmatizing a whole community, thereby making the problem worse. He said all women, religious or secular, should be helped to learn English, not just Muslim women. Burnham noted that the government had cut spending on English language classes in 2011. The Ramadan Foundation, a Muslim group, also criticized Cameron. It said very few of the 3 million Muslims in Britain are extremists. It said the best way to fight terrorism is to build support with Muslims and support the work done across the country, not denigrating Muslims. But Naz Shah, a Muslim and a Labour Member of Parliament, supports the plan. Shaw noted that too many children are starting school with no English because it is not spoken at home. He says that has an effect on their learning ability because education starts in the home. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is What's Trending Today. Actor Jamie Foxx won an Academy Award for playing singer Ray Charles in the film Ray. Fox is famous for his work in movies, his jokes in stand-up comedy routines, and even for recording songs. And on Monday, Fox added another honor to the list. He saved a man from a burning car. 32-year-old Brett Kyle drove a truck off the road in front of Fox's home in California. The truck hit a ditch and reportedly turned over several times. The truck caught fire, and Fox ran out of his home to help. He pulled the driver out of the truck and to safety. Kyle was taken to the hospital for treatment of serious injuries. He also was arrested for driving drunk. Fox met with the man's father on Tuesday. This story was one of the top trending items on Twitter Wednesday morning. People had only good things to say about Fox for doing a good deed. And Fox added a photo to Instagram. It shows him hugging Kyle's father. Fox wrote, "This is all that matters, that a man, a son, a brother's life was spared last night." And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
There has been praise and condemnation for Hollywood star Sean Penn in recent days. Sean Penn has had controversial moments throughout his public life. But earlier this month, the public learned that Penn met with the leader of a brutal Mexican crime group. The Sinaloa group is known for especially vicious killings, torture, and drug dealing. Katie Weaver has more.
The actor interviewed Joaquin El Chapo Guzman in October 2015. Guzman had escaped from a Mexican federal prison in July. It was his second escape. He was on the lam from 2001 to 2014 after the first prison break. He was serving a 20-year sentence for murder and drug trafficking. Rolling Stone magazine published Penn's interview online January 11th. Mexican federal police recaptured El Chapo a day earlier. In his article, Penn explained why he wanted to meet the crime leader. The actor wrote that he wanted to explore what may be inconsistent with the American government and media's descriptions. Penn is a longtime political activist. He has involved himself in international affairs at high levels. In 2007, he met and befriended Hugo Chavez, who was then the socialist president of Venezuela. The U.S. government was not a fan of Chavez, who allied himself with Cuban leaders Fidel and Raúl Castro. When Chavez died in 2013, Penn said the U.S., quote, lost a friend that it never knew it had. Penn also has met with Raúl Castro, and he got involved in the Falklands dispute between Britain and Argentina. The actor met with Argentinian President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner in 2012 after Britain made military moves toward Argentina. Penn sided with Argentina in that dispute. He said the world would not accept, quote, archaic colonialist ideology. Penn has written about his experiences for the news media before. He visited Iraq in 2004 and Iran the following year. He wrote about those experiences for the San Francisco Chronicle. Penn had been to Iraq earlier to protest international military strikes against the country. The Star also helped in times of natural disaster. He started a foundation to help victims of the earthquake in Haiti. He also went to New Orleans shortly after Hurricane Katrina and reportedly rescued some survivors. And in 2012, Sean Penn went to Bolivia to visit a U.S. businessman jailed there. Jacob Ostreicher had been jailed for months and never charged with a crime. Penn promised to work for his release. A year later, Ostreicher was out of jail, in the care of Penn. He has publicly thanked Penn for his efforts. Penn's interaction with Joaquin Guzman, the drug kingpin, was set up by another actor. Kate Del Castillo had expressed support for the crime group leader for several years. She said she believes the Mexican government is the more corrupt of the two. Guzman and Castillo exchanged a series of texts. She suggested that the criminal meet with Sean Penn. Reports now suggest that Guzman had never heard of Penn. His interest in meeting Del Castillo was apparently stronger. Penn said in his Rolling Stone report that he wanted to see the other side of the drug war. He has said that professional journalists are too focused on talking to different sides in an issue. Perhaps this is why Sean Penn did not ask Guzman about the hundreds of reporters killed in Mexico to protect organized crime. Among the many media professionals angered by Penn, Mexican reporters are especially upset. Journalist Leon Krauss wrote about the actor's article in El Universal newspaper. He described it as a perfect act of propaganda for Guzman. He wrote that Penn's version of Guzman is almost likable if it wasn't for his cartel's 10,000 murders. Other reporters criticized Penn and Rolling Stone for sending the piece to Guzman for approval before publication. Sean Penn dismisses the journalistic objections to his story. He says the press is simply jealous that he was able to get to Guzman. But Penn also says his interview and article were a failure. He told television host Charlie Rose that he had hoped the story would start an honest and critical conversation about the drug war. But he said, "I have a regret that the entire discussion about this article ignores that purpose." Officials in Mexico have said Sean Penn's interview helped them find and capture Guzman. Penn denies this and says he does not fear the Sinaloa crime group. I'm Katie Weaver.
Want to hear an American musician perform or watch a play? Thanks to the internet, you no longer have to go to a performing arts center. Many concerts are available live on your computer or mobile phone. Jim Tedder has more on live streaming concerts.
The Detroit Symphony Orchestra will be performing works by Georges Bizet Friday morning. You might enjoy classical music and like to attend the performance, but live far away from America's Motor City. On Saturday, the go-go group Curtis Johnson and the band Eternity is performing at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. If you live overseas, going to that show is probably out of the question. But there is a solution. These and other concerts are available live on the Internet. You can hear them in real time with an electronic device. Both performances will be available on the World Wide Web. They are part of a growing number of concerts broadcast on computers, tablets, and smartphones. These digital concerts are known as live streaming. Technology expert Michael Antonoff says better and less costly equipment is making it easier for performers and theaters to offer music live online. The quality of the sound and video images are improving all the time, he says. A few years ago, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra experienced hard times, similar to its home city's financial problems. The orchestra even had to cancel its 2010-2011 season because of a bitter labor dispute. After the dispute ended, the group started offering concerts online. Those online concerts now have as many as 40,000 viewers per show. People in 100 nations are watching. It is a huge part of our increasing global reach, said Eric Woodhams, director of digital initiatives at the Detroit Symphony. He said it also increases donations to the orchestra. Some concerts are done from fine arts centers. Other performers sing from their living rooms, using a small camera or two and several microphones to capture their songs. But it does take some getting used to, especially the lack of a live audience. Many live stream concerts charge between $2 and $10 to watch. Many are free, or let people choose how much to pay. People can add tips for the performers, much like someone might leave extra money for a server at a restaurant. On New Year's Eve, many people at Washington's Kennedy Center were dancing to the modern jazz tunes of Michael Menso and the Shakes. Menso urged people watching at home to join in the dancing. But performers cannot see whether their online followers are dancing, cheering, or falling asleep. For international performers, Kennedy Center officials see a jump in online viewership from the home countries of the performer. It is not just music being streamed on the web. On December 10th, the producer of the musical Daddy Long Legs put the show on the web free of charge. It was the first live webcast of a New York musical. Over 150,000 people from 135 nations watched, producer Ken Davenport said. In other words, it would take his musical 2.7 years of sold-out performances to draw that many people. Davenport said, the webcast provided the word of mouth that smaller theaters like his need to get noticed. Popular sites streaming live concerts and other events include StageIt.com, ConcertWindow.com, and LiveStream.com. I'm Jim Tedder.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.